are listening to Real World News.
The truth about the UN climate talks and the challenges of the social movements. The second week of the new round of UN international negotiations on climate change started on Monday in Bonn, Germany. The first week has been disappointing, regretted environmentalist Azad Rehman of Friends of the Earth England, Wales and Northern Ireland in an interview with Real World Radio. The activist leads the delegation of Friends of the Earth International in Bonn. In the interview with Real World Radio, Rehman talked about the negotiations, the positions of the different countries and blocs on the Kyoto Protocol and its future, the lack of political will by governments to combat the climate crisis in an effective way, and the urgent need of the social movements to pressure countries, among other things.
Real World Radio is interviewing Azad Rehman. He's part of Friends of the Earth England, Wales and Northern Ireland, and here is the head of the delegation of Friends of the Earth International in Bonn in this new round of talks on climate change. Azad, welcome to Real World Radio.
Thank you very much, Jose.
Azad, we are starting the second week of negotiations here in Bonn. How would you evaluate the first week, the last week of these talks?
Disappointing. We increasingly are seeing report after report showing that the impacts of climate change are real, are happening now. We only need to look around the world and see the droughts in the Sahel, the floods in Pakistan, in China, the forest fires, see the impacts of adverse weather impacts on millions, if not billions, of people. And we've seen already the recent report from the UNEP, United Nations Environment Programme, about the trajectory in which we're heading, that we're heading towards a 4 or 5 degree warming of the planet with catastrophic implications for the people of this planet and the ecosystems of this planet. So it's very, very clear that the window of opportunity, the window of our chance to make emissions reductions, to stop the planet warming to levels of which will be dangerous for everyone, is rapidly diminishing. And unfortunately, that urgency is not being reflected here in these negotiations. What we're seeing here is still continuing pressure from rich developed countries not to make the emissions reductions. That is not only their moral, but their legal responsibility. We're seeing pushes from the United States for the continuing of the discredited pledge and review system, with that rolling back the science-based climate regime. We've seen Canada announce this week that it would no longer commit to a second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol because already its emissions are outstripping its target, and this is a result of its investment in dirty fossil fuel like tar sands. So the picture is very grim. On the positive side, we're still seeing many developing countries and civil society groups calling for more ambitious reductions, saying that we must in Durban see a second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. We must see real climate finance to those countries, so that developing countries, so that they can take actions both to deal with the issues of both poverty and climate change, for them to also adapt to the impacts of climate change. But unfortunately, you know, the amount of money that's being put on the table is minuscule. It comes with many, many different strings attached. Much of it is loans, it's not direct public finance, so it will create even more debt to developing countries. We're not in a good place. The world is not in a good place, and the only answer and the only hope is for the voices of people from all around the world to be heard even louder and even stronger in this run-up to Durban and in Durban, so that we can say to governments, we will not allow you to shirk your responsibility to tackle climate change.
Azad, what is the position of the European Union related to the Kyoto Protocol?
So the European Union says that it will remain supportive of the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol, but it terms its commitment with conditionalities, and those conditionalities ultimately mean that it's not very serious about committing to a second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. So already this year we saw in Bangkok The first meeting of the climate negotiations of 2011, where both Russia and Japan informed the negotiations that they were no longer willing to commit to the second commitment period. Here we've seen Canada join them. We have a potential of both Australia and New Zealand who are also potentially wanting to jump ship from the Kyoto Protocol, jump ship from a legal obligation, from a science-based obligation to a pledge and review system. And we have the European Union, who really should be showing climate leadership, who really should be showing real leadership here, who are not showing leadership. What they want is a new regime which encompasses both the major developing countries, as well as the United States, as well as all the other rich developed countries. So what they're willing to do is break the agreement that was made in Bali. They're willing to fragment the climate regime as we know it. And we know that once that happens, we will not have the time to be able to negotiate a new regime in time to be able to tackle climate change. So it's a very dangerous game that the European Union is playing.
Assad, do you think that the social movements, social organizations, the different networks working on these issues around the world are organized enough and they are working together enough to create this pressure that you say that it is necessary to really push for a big change in the politics on climate change to prevent a real catastrophe when we talk about climate? I mean, are there the conditions to have a dream?
Climate change is clearly the moral issue, not of just this generation, I think not even of this century, but it is potentially of the whole of humanity. Its implications are so catastrophic, its impacts on the lives and livelihoods of billions of people. And unfortunately, we don't have a strong voice of the people or of the movements, holding governments to account, saying with a very, very clear voice that we expect governments to agree the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. We expect them to provide the climate finance. We expect them to provide the technology. Unfortunately, our voices aren't strong enough. These negotiations are not going to be successful on the basis of policy. If it was policy alone, if it was evidence alone, then this would be an open and shut case. We would have won a long time ago. We have document after document, policy statement after policy statement, analysis after analysis, all showing what needs to happen, when it needs to happen, how it needs to happen. What is lacking is political will to make it happen. And political will only comes when the movements are pressuring their governments to take action. And so what's required in the global south is for our movements to direct their energies to their governments to say, we expect you to commit and to hold to these positions, and pressure in the north of northern civil society groups, pressuring their governments to stop this dismantling that we're seeing of the climate regime. The argument for a long time has always been that the job of people inside the negotiations is to push the right policies and hope that the space outside and the voices outside and the movements would come and would be on the streets, would be in the negotiating rooms, would be in the capitals, would be linking and talking and putting pressure. That hasn't happened. I mean, unfortunately, it just hasn't happened. We have not seen hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people on the street in Cancun. And unless we see hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, not only in the streets of Durban, but in every capital and in every city and in every town and village saying those demands, we're not going to see a successful outcome. The reality is it's political pressure that is needed. And that, unfortunately, is not what we're seeing. That, unfortunately, is not what's happening from our movements. So we need all our movements to look in one direction, to unify on one platform, to make and speak with one clear voice, with a set of very simple and clear demands, and make sure that those demands are being heard in the corridors of power.
And in this framework, Assad, how are these social movements and networks working towards Durban, the next COP on December? And what do you think about the issue of been organizing all time, taking the cops as a reference? I mean, do the social movements and networks need to go beyond that, or how do you see that?
So I think there's two different questions there.
Yeah.
So in terms of the first question, in terms of the question around the civil cop as a space, look, nobody believes that we should just focus our attention on the cops. The cops are moments. They're moments for us as movements, for regions, for to be able to come together, to have one target, to be able to focus the energy. But that energy doesn't come in abstract. It comes because we're building real alternatives on the ground. We're fighting at a local level against extractives, against mining, the oil industry. We're fighting to protect our forests. We're protecting the rights of sustainable agriculture. We're working on real everyday bread and butter issues, the lives and livelihoods of people. You work on those issues. You work on the real context of creating a real alternative, an alternative to this fossil fuel-driven industrial complex that we have, which is high consumption, export-driven agenda of a development model, which is burning both the planet and delivering nothing for the majority of its people. That said, that we have to do those things, and then we also have to have energy and pressure to put at the COP level. It's not an either-or; it's an and process. Our strength is because we are strong at the grassroots. But that voice of the grassroots needs to be heard, because the people in this corridors of power, in these negotiations, are making decisions about how this world will look, how it will feel, how it will operate, and who will pay the price of the decisions that they make. And it's the poorest people in the world. It's those people who rely and live around the forests. It's the peasants, the farmers, women. It will be the communities on the front line who face the impacts of climate change. We're already facing the impacts of climate change, and their voices are not being heard here in the corridors of power. Here, it's businesses, it's elites, it's big decision makers, both from the north and the south, who have a common interest and a common economic interest, and we must unravel that interest.
Okay, and what about the work being done towards Durban?
So, after Cancun, I think many of the networks realized that what we needed was a much more powerful voice of civil society and of social movements. And so many groups, Friends of the Earth, Jubilee South, PACJA and others, have been working together to try and develop a unified platform, a campaign with simple goals of mobilizing civil society and communities in Durban, in South Africa, and across the African continent, and mobilizing people in Asia and Europe and Latin America in solidarity, and also more than in solidarity, of putting their own domestic and regional issues at the forefront, but working with a very common direction, which is to ensure that we see a positive outcome in Durban, and that what we don't see is a continuation of what we saw in Copenhagen with the Copenhagen Accord or the Cancun Agreements, and what we don't have is Durban has been the moment when the climate was lost, you know. So it's a pivotal moment. I think 2011 and 2012 will go down as probably the most important years, at least in our generation, of decisions about what the world will look like. Between Durban and Rio, people will be making decisions about the global economy, about how we live, the environment, the way we live, the quality of our lives, and who will pay the price. And unless we are here, have our voices being heard, then the people will be making decisions not in the interests of all people, not in the interests of the most vulnerable or the poorest people, but in the interests of those with the loudest voices, with the most power and with the most money.
Okay, Asad Rehman from Friends of the Earth England, Wales and Northern Ireland, thank you very much.